98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. Here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station, we are live from the Oxygen Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Burnsy, what's going on?
You know, I want to be Sean Payton. Can I be Sean Payton?
I just want to be anybody else. After I posted the shape of the states yesterday, and I said I got them all wrong, and I didn't know that people, man, I got, my God. Oh, my God. Have you ever looked at a map in your life? One word, boxing.
Look,
someone get the limo for Gambo. There's no way you'd actually post this without it being a joke, right? I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I really don't know any of them. Like, I really don't.
I was surprised. You know, I Twitter never surprises me. There's a lot of vitriol, obviously, on that website. I was a little surprised. You handed Twitter a loaded gun last night and said, fire away. You know, I was a little surprised.
Proving what we already know. Hawaii and Alaska, Gambo?
Yeah.
Like, this can't be true. I'm like, I didn't get it. Jay Feely chimed in. How?
I saw it.
Doug Gottlieb chimed in.
Doug Gottlieb. Mike Salk, our good buddy from Seattle, he chimed in as well.
One guy's like, did you go to ASU?
Oh, no. Taking down a whole university while you're at it.
Man.
I was surprised you posted that, but hey, that's...
I didn't think, like, I just kind of... I think Greg Bedard chimed in. Our old friend Greg Bedard.
He said, this is worse than my pick in 2015 where the Cardinals would lose 10 straight games. Yeah, you had a lot of comments on that last night, Gamble. Yeah. I did not expect that. I was surprised you posted it. I was surprised.
Listen, I've never pretended to be smart, okay? Never pretended to be smart.
No, you have not. I want to be Sean Payton. Because this guy is, he's been hugely successful in New Orleans. He's won a Super Bowl. He's in a position where he can basically take a year off to recharge his batteries. And he's going to come back and be coaching somebody a year from now. I guarantee it. He is going to be Bruce Arians. Promise you right now, he is going to take a break from coaching. He's going to take a year off to recharge his batteries. He's going to come back next year in a hand-picked situation to coach a team that he wants to coach. And it's going to be Bruce Arians all over again.
Can you say Arizona Cardinals 2023? If Cliff doesn't get the job done?
Oh, do you know something or are you just talking?
I'm just talking. Wouldn't he be tops on your list? 16 years of New Orleans. He won a Super Bowl. He's had some of the most incredible offenses that the NFL has ever seen. He'll take a year off, recharge the batteries. You know, he's 58 years old. It's not like he's 68 years old. He's 58. So take a year off and then, come back and see what the best opportunity is for him.
In a snap. In a New York minute, I would take him to coach the Cardinals a year from now.
If you could get him right now, would you say, like, you know what, I'll fire? If you could get him right now, would you fire Cliff today?
Yeah, I would.
Me too.
I would.
If I could get him.
If I get him, yeah.
Like, nothing against, listen.
Nothing against Cliff. If I get him, I would get him.
Yeah. Sure.
But I think it sounds like he's really burned out. I'm watching his press conference. I've got the sound turned down, but all the reports are that he's very burned out. All right. So Gambo's lack of knowledge of the shapes of the states of the United States of America and Sean Payton's press conference, not our top story of the day. Here's what is on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Although, I was wondering what he was doing. Apparently, Sean Payton handed baked goods to his longtime owner, Gail Benson, in a move right out of Ted Lasso. He got up from the podium, handed his owner some baked goods, just like Ted Lasso does. So what's her name in the show?
Oh, yeah,
where
your
brings
favorite
her
character.
A biscuit every day. Yeah,
your favorite character. Yeah, what's her name?
The
tall blonde lady.
Yeah, the owner. Rebecca.
The owner, Rebecca. That's your favorite character.
Yeah, I do like her very much.
Yeah, she gets biscuits every day. Here's a biscuit. And he makes them by scratch.
He does. He's got every single day. Yeah.
And she's trying to find out what store he's buying them at, but he makes them.
That's not our top story today. Sorry, I just got distracted by that. Here's what is.
115-109. This one is all over, and the Suns get the victory.
Suns get the win last night over the Utah Jazz. A depleted Utah Jazz team. We go into a game like that just expecting the Suns are going to cruise to a 20-point win. And so often, more often than not, games like that just don't materialize. The Jazz fought. The Suns maybe took them a little lightly, I should say, and Chris Paul kind of had to bail them out in the fourth quarter of that game last night.
Boy, doesn't he always seem to bail them out when they need to? That game was, you know, they got up, the Suns were up 7-0, they were up 11-4, they forced a timeout, and, you know, you just, I always pay attention to the substitution patterns. The first subs were Elfrid Payton with campaign out. Elfrid Payton came in for Chris Paul. Biombo came in for JaVale. Then Landry came in, and then Ish Wainwright got to come in with no Jay Crowder. Ish Wainwright got to play. So I always pay attention to the substitution patterns. It always fascinates me how Monty uses the guys and how and when and where and who plays with who. And Book played the entire first quarter, and he took 17 shots, and I think he ended up with, was it 96 shots in the game? Was it 96?
Not quite. It was
92?
35, I believe. Was he. I think 92 would be a record in the NBA.
It seemed like he took 92 shots. It seemed like it. But you're exactly right. Chris Paul had to bail him out because all of a sudden Rudy Gay hits two free throws. It's a 95-91 game. It's 95-91. And you're like, okay. Then Paul hits a jumper, makes it 95-93. So the Suns are down 95-91. Chris Paul hits a jumper. Chris Paul hits a three-pointer. Chris Paul hits another three-pointer. Chris Paul hits a free throw. Chris Paul hits a running bank shot, and the Suns are up 107-99. It was almost like, and we talk about how balanced the Suns are, it was almost like Chris Paul said, hey, just get on my back. Just watch me. Then he hit two free throws. Then he hit an elbow jumper.
Yep.
And then it's 111-100. So often we talk about how balanced the scoring is. Last night, when that game was in doubt, Chris Paul said, I am going to take all of these big shots. And you guys can watch, grab a rebound, play defense. I'm going to take every big shot, and he did.
It was a tale of two runs in there, and one is just kind of a bigger version of the run. The Suns used a 25-9 run to get the lead back and extend their lead to 11. Of those 22 points, Chris Paul scored or assisted 22 of the 25 points.
It was all Chris Paul.
And then within that run, there was a 15-6 run in which Paul scored or assisted on 13 of the 15. So, yes, it was literally all Chris Paul. And he did. He put them on, and he needed to. And look, I get it. Utah Jazz team, and they're missing Mitchell, and they're missing Gobert, and they're missing Conley and Bogdanovich and Ingles and Royce O'Neal. And I was listening to Al McCoy driving home, and I got to admit, I'm like, who are these guys? Who are these guys that you're speaking of? Because I don't know who they are. Give them credit. They played hard, and I'm sure the Suns had a problem maintaining their level of intensity because they looked at a Jazz team missing six of their top 7 minutes guys and said, oh, we got this. We can play. We can downshift to 70%. We're going to be just fine tonight. And to the Jazz credit, that wasn't the case. And to Chris Paul's credit, he took over that game recognizing somebody needed to do something in the fourth quarter to make sure the Suns didn't suffer a very embarrassing loss at home to Utah.
It was a dogfight, man. It was a fight. It was a battle. I mean, they weren't going away. It was kind of like the Indiana game, you know? I mean, these teams are going to play you hard. These guys are getting the opportunity. I mean, you know, the Jazz started Trent Forrest, Jordan Clarkson, Daniel House, Rudy Gay, and Hassan Whiteside. Now, people know who Rudy Gay is. He's an old player. Hassan Whiteside, oh, yeah, I remember him. Daniel House, Jordan Clarkson, people know Clarkson. Forrest is a guy not a lot of people know about.
That was most of the guy I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and most of the guys don't know the bench players right now because you're right, no Conley, no Gobert, no Mitchell, no Ingles, no Bogdanovich. And the Suns didn't have D.A., they didn't have Jay, they didn't have Payne. They were out three of their key players. But it ended up being one of those battles that came right down to the wire. And boy, Cam, what are you doing? The final shot of the game. Chris Paul's one rebound away from a triple-double, and Cam Johnson grabs the rebound. Oh, man, you got it. Oh, didn't somebody tell him?
Yeah, apparently not. You got to let him go. You got to let him do it.
Yeah, Chris was right there. He was right. Oh, he was right there. Almost had that. But what a great game for Chris Paul. He's just amazing. He's amazing to watch. I hope everybody appreciates that because we are watching. He's the Tom Brady of the NBA. Like at that age, playing at that level, he's just smarter than everybody else.
He's awfully good, and the Suns are so incredibly fortunate to have him. And yeah, Devin Booker, strong start. He shot the ball just so much. You could tell he was just trying to find that rhythm that he didn't have the other night against Indiana when he was, what, like 5 of 22, 5 of 23?
He was 3 of 13 from three-point range.
He had a good first half, and so I don't blame him trying to carry that over into the second half because he had 19 points in the first half, and he was shooting with great efficiency. I think he was making over 50% of his shots. It did not carry over into the second half, and he just kept looking for it, and it wasn't there. Same two teams coming up tomorrow. We'll find out if any more of the Jazz guys are able to come back, and we'll find out from a Suns perspective about Ayton, about Crowder. Doesn't sound like Campaign's going to be back anytime soon. He's going to be reevaluated in a couple of weeks. But Suns get the win, and they will play the Jazz coming up. But that's not the only Suns news we have today. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Suns made a move in their front office. The guy who's been the architect of all of this success, he's not going anywhere. We'll tell you what we know about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Well, we have a very, very similar roster makeup. It's, you know, a lot of returning guys, and then the guys that we added in, I think, fit our team culture really well. But I think it really starts kind of at the head of the organization, you know, with guys like Champ and Coach Mott who put these teams together and then lead these teams.
That's Cam Johnson on Bickley and Murata from September of last year. Our team spark starts with James Jones. And today the Phoenix Suns rewarded James Jones for the spark that he has provided for this organization over the last few years. Not quite batting 1,000 as a general manager in this league, but damn close as James Jones gets a multi-year contract extension, Gambo. First reported by the Undefeated and then confirmed by the Suns about 20 minutes after that this morning. No word on years, no word on terms, unless you've got any information about that.
No, but I spoke with people in the organization today. They just wanted to release that it was a multi-year contract. Here's what I know. The deal came together rather quickly. It's not something that they've been working on for a long time. It wasn't complicated at all. He's happy here. His family's happy here. The Suns feel that he's done a tremendous job and that he has all the ingredients of a GM that they wanted. I mean, he communicates well with players. He communicates well with staff. He communicates well with fans, with media, with management. I mean, his communication skills are unbelievable. What they loved about him is the culture that he has built here. It was one of the first things that he wanted to do was build a culture that people wanted to come to, that people wanted to be a part of, and they've been able to get that with James. James has built a tremendous culture here, and they've been benefiting from that. I mean, this is a place to play now. This is a place that people want to play, and they've got the practice facility. They got the refurbished arena. There's just a lot to like about the direction of the Suns. But, yes, the deal came together very quickly, wasn't very complicated because he's happy here and he wants to continue to build upon the successes that they've had here.
I want to take you back to our show in August of 2020. So that would have been right at the end of the bubble, for which has provided the Phoenix Suns just so much joy and so much content, and so many good things happened after their trip to Orlando, Florida. This is Robert Sarver on our show back in August of 2020 on how James Jones has us, the Suns, going in the right direction.
James has made some good moves. I think he's got a real strong insight into the game, but he also has a good, calming, gentle way about him that enables him to communicate well with our players. Our players respect him because he's played the game at the highest level and seen the game played at the highest level. And, you know, from my standpoint, he's all about the organization. And so I think we've created a environment here that's very attractive to players. And I think when you guys get a chance to see our practice facility, which I anticipate to be the best in the world, when it opens in a couple months, I think you'll see that just another step in the right direction.
Since entering the bubble in the summer of 2020, the Phoenix Suns have the league's best regular season record, 96 wins, 30 losses. That amounts to a win percentage of about 76%, give or take. That's not bad at all, obviously.
No, and again, when you get this close, right, I mean, you know, you want to finish the job. You've got the team. You're set. You're going to be competitive for a number of years. You got a team that can win it all this year. You want to finish that job. I mean, he is, you know, James was motivated as a player to win. He's motivated as a general manager to win. I mean, to deliver a championship to this organization that has never had one, you know, might be his ultimate accomplishment, because he is the, you know, he was a role player on a lot of the teams he played at, and he had an unbelievable career and a long career, and he was a well-respected player and a good role player. But here, man, he is the architect of this team. He is building this team from what he wants to do, and I've told people many times, very much like the Pacers team that he was on initially in the NBA. This isn't being built like the Miami teams or the Cleveland teams. This team is being built very much like the Pacers team, which was a very deep team.
There was as I mentioned, the story was broken by the Undefeated, and as part of their story, they did ask James Jones, and James Jones is quoted in the story, quote, "It's more than I ever could have dreamed of to be a part of a team like this, some of the best professionals across sports, and to have the success that we're having. It's so much fun." He was also asked about whether it gave him any pause to accept this extension in the middle of this investigation against the Phoenix Suns. And he said, quote, "It didn't give me pause," close quote. "This organization," and this is continuing the quote, "this organization, business and basketball, it's good. The talent, the people here are amazing. I have such a great team that I work with on the basketball side, but just as well equally and sometimes even more on the business side. Because we're the Suns, right? This is entertainment, and you don't do the things that we do in a vacuum. That's what I tell people a lot of times. You don't do this in a vacuum. It takes everyone. And if you have the right mix of people, if you have common goals and you're aligned, it makes working, coming to work every day, exciting," close quote. I had thought when this news came down today, and I don't know if this is a misplaced thought, I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but the timing of this extension, given that this investigation has been going on for several months now, I wonder if potentially this is a sign that everything is going to remain status quo with the Phoenix Suns when it comes to their ownership group and the investigation that we've been told might be wrapping up sometime in the next month or so. I think Dan Bickley, our colleague, reported that a few weeks ago. I have no idea if one has anything to do with the other, Gambo.
Yeah.
But I got to admit, that was my first reaction when I saw the story this morning, wondering if there was some kind of a connection that maybe this thing's about to wrap up, and maybe it's going to be good news for Robert Sarver, so good that he decided to sign James Jones to a contract extension.
Well,
I don't know.
I'll tell you, I don't, and I checked on this just to see if I could find out anything about the investigation wrapping up. What I will tell you is that the NBA is, there is no insight that the Suns are getting on, you know, when it's going to be completed or what the details are showing or anything like that. So they're not even getting a heads up on anything. I mean, the NBA is doing their investigation. They're keeping everything close to the vest. You know, nobody in that Suns organization is getting, you know, you're not calling like, "Hey, what are you hearing? Or where are we right now? Or what, is it almost fit?" Like, they're not getting anything like that. So that, I was curious to see if the Suns would have gotten any information like that, but the answer is no, they have not.
Yeah, I'm not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole here. It just seems like one of those things that you would do where, you know, if there's any kind of lingering uncertainty about the future of the organization, about what's going to happen because of the investigation, I don't know if this is the kind of thing that you would do in a moment like that. Again, it might not have anything to do with anything. And certainly James Jones, one way or another, despite the results of the investigation, has earned the right to have his contract extended for multiple years based off the fact that I referred to this earlier at the beginning of the segment. He is batting almost 1,000 as a general manager. Not everything's been perfect. Not every decision has been the right one. But compared to others in this business, he's been as close to 1,000 as you can get when it comes to his batting average making decisions for this organization.
Remember, we once had Lance Blanks as the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, who I said has the personality of a thumbtack.
I do remember that, yes.
Yes, Lance Blanks. So, I mean, that was as bad as it gets with him. I mean, it didn't get any worse than that. You know, Ryan McDonough actually did some good things.
Of course.
You know, some things weren't, but some things were good. I mean, he did draft Devin Booker and DA and McHale. So I think Ryan will always have a little piece of the success on these teams. There were failures there, too, but there were good things that Ryan did. But James has been able to take everything and put it together. You're right. Not everything has been perfect, but, you know, they didn't look to build a team based on stars. Look at the players they had. Look at Torrey Craig last year, the contributions. Look at JaVale McGee. you know, this year and the contributions that you're getting from JaVale McGee. I mean, he knows what type of player would be a good fit here, and he's looking for players that would be good fits. He's not looking for Trevor Ariza, right? He's looking for players that will come in and play their ass off, and that's the type of players he's bringing in.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and paint this picture like everything has been perfect. Tyler Johnson wasn't a great acquisition by James Jones early on. It was. I understand the logic behind it. The Oubre deal was kind of a happy accident, given that that wasn't originally the intention of that deal with the Memphis Grizzlies. But at the time, you think about the draft day deal where he got Cam Johnson and Dario Saric. He was ridiculed for that. T.J. Warren to Indiana for cash. He was ridiculed for that. But the signing of even one under the radar like Ricky Rubio, man, that had a lot to do with starting to fix what was broken.
So
starting
much.
To change the culture, right? I mean, that was
so glad you brought that up because the Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre, I mean, me personally and Aaron Baines, I will never discount them getting the Suns to mediocrity. And in some ways, that's what they did. They made the Suns, you know, not a laughing stock. The Suns were a laughing stock, winning 20 games every year. And it's not like they were a playoff team when they almost got to the playoffs that year in the bubble. And that team was Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines and Kelly Oubre. And I think Oubre was hurt and wasn't playing. But I always give those guys credit because they came here and they played their ass off on a team that wasn't very good. And they helped the Suns become somewhat respectable.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, our eyes begin to look ahead towards next football season in the Valley. And that means free agents to keep, free agents to go get, targets and suggestions and who you keep and who you let go. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. We promised we were going to roll this one out today. We did. From what I understand, Gambo, according to Eric, we're getting several very funny responses to our question.
I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to go look right now.
Throw it out there, Eric. What
all
do we
right.
got?
Well, the question for today, and there's only two options. As a Cardinals fan, who are you rooting for this weekend?
Chiefs.
The Rams and the 49ers.
Bengals.
You got to pick it.
We didn't give you the
Chiefs.
We didn't give you the Chiefs as an option. We didn't give you the Bengals as an option. We didn't give you none of the above as an option. We didn't
who
give you
am I rooting for?
We didn't give you a natural disaster as an option. it's one or the other. Rams or 49ers. I didn't stop a whole bunch of people from tweeting it all.
Yeah, we've got option C. I don't care. We are eliminated. A gif of Bane walking into the stadium. Somebody said they're rooting for an asteroid.
Wow. I'm rooting for an asteroid.
I am not. Okay, that would result in thousands of losses of life among innocent
people. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of California, but I'm not rooting for that. Come on.
I wouldn't root for that. This one's easy for me. I'm rooting for the San Francisco 49ers. Easy. Easy. Don't even have to think twice about it. I can't. Because the Rams, for two reasons. Number one,
okay,
the Rams are L.A., and we've always got a thing for rooting against L.A. So that's easy reason number one. And easy reason number two is that the Rams put everything into winning it all this season, and I think it would be awesome if they are now 0-7 in their last seven games against the 49ers. If 49er fans show up en masse just like they did in Week 18, I think it would be great that their season would end at the hands of those guys again after everything that happened in Week 18. This one's easy. I'm rooting for San Francisco. Peace.
Okay, me too.
Okay.
Yeah,
me
and
too.
The audience is pretty heavily in agreement with you guys. 71.8% say the 49ers, 28.2% say the Rams. And yeah, why would you root for the Rams? Unless you want to be like, oh, we lost to the best team. Why are you rooting for the Rams?
Nope. I'm not going to do that.
Their helmets. You're want to play there.
There's that. You know, Matthew Stafford. Maybe you're a big Stafford fan from his days in Detroit. I don't know. But that's our poll question. We promised we were going to roll it out today, and roll it out we did. You can vote for it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. At Burns and Gambo is where you can find it. Free agency begins in the NFL on March 16th. So we're still just a shade under 2 months away from free agency starting. And keep in mind, a lot of these names that we might be discussing here might not ever hit the free agent market. They might be tagged. They might be re-signed by their own teams. They might never be allowed to hit the open market because a lot of times, and Gambo, you know this, free agency can be a bit of a myth sometimes. You're going to get guys that are kind of damaged goods, right? Guys that their teams ultimately looked at and decided, yeah, we like you, but we don't love you enough to bring you back. So anytime you go swimming in the free agent pools, you got to be careful of what you're going to get. That being said, lots of rankings out there. Top NFL free agents for 2022. I think you got this off of ESPN, if I'm not mistaken. Ranking the best 50 players potentially on the market this offseason. Chandler Jones came in 16th on that list. Hassan Reddick came in 20th.
Chris. Yeah, and I think that if they have their way, they will move on from the 32-year-old pass rusher and go get the 27-year-old pass rusher. You're going to gain 5 years right there. You've got one guy slowing down, not the player he once was. Again, you take out that one big game against the Titans, and he was very, very average. And in many of the games, just non-existent. You know, Reddick signed a one-year prove-it deal with the Panthers. He had the 12.5 sacks with the Cardinals, and he proved it. He had 11 sacks, 16 games. He went back out there and got double-digit sacks. So I think he's going to continue to be a guy that's going to get you double-digit sacks. In fact, if you look at the last 2 years, he's got 23.5 sacks, the 12.5 with Arizona, and then the 11 with Carolina. Over the two-year period, that's number five in the NFL. That's number five. And he did it with fewer pass rushing snaps than all the other guys ahead of him. So there's a lot of production there. I do expect that they will look at Hassan Reddick, they like him, and they will try to make a play for him over Chandler. That's what I would my expectations would be.
And I'm fine with that, but I got a couple of thoughts that kind of splinter off of that. I mean, number one is that you're going to have to do something if you let Chandler Jones walk. You're obviously going to have to spend your money on somebody and address that position somewhere, because we can debate Chandler Jones' value all we want. It's going to leave a glaring hole on your defense to not have him out there. That's number one. Number two, man, they have other options other than Hassan Reddick. You know, have a plan B, have a plan C, have a plan LMNOP, because there's no guarantee that Hassan Reddick is going to even get to the market. The Panthers could decide to keep him. The Panthers could decide to extend him long-term before he gets to free agency. And even if he does get to free agency, you know, the Cardinals might have a small advantage given that they're the team that drafted him. But I would imagine a Hassan Reddick on the open market after kind of proving himself for the last 2 years is going to have a lot of suitors. And I just don't think there's a guarantee. There's no guarantee that a Hassan Reddick that hits the open market automatically, you know, the Cardinals are number one on his list. I don't think we can assume that. You have to be prepared for other options if he does not come here. They better be prepared for that.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, you said that time and time again. I mean, you can't let Chandler walk it and you don't have a pass rusher. You can't completely rely on J.J. Watt. Now, you've got Marcus Golden, who you like, but you need that one guy. You need that one guy that can gain the attention of offensive coordinators, that guy that can, you know, get you the double-digit sacks, and he's a guy that they might have to double on certain occasions. So I do think that that's going to be a priority. I don't think you go get that guy in the draft. I think you got to have a proven guy. You may like a guy in the draft, and I don't mind you drafting somebody with one of your picks, but I don't think you could, you know, count on a guy being drafted to give you, you know, all of those sacks and pressures and hits and things like that.
Given his age and the production he had last year, I just don't know if Hassan Reddick's going to be available. I could see him getting tagged. I could see him getting signed long-term before he ever hits the market. I mean, you got to be smart about this if you're the Carolina Panthers and letting a guy in his prime at one of the most important positions in the NFL just walk like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be real smart about something like that and make sure. I just don't know if he's going to be available or not. I really don't.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and we don't know. I mean, could they tag him and pay him all that money? I mean, I guess that they could. They could do that. They brought him in on a 1 year deal. If I was them, boy, don't you wish you gave him a 2 year deal if you were them right now?
Sure, of course. Yeah, but he was playing on a prove it deal, you know, and he proved it. He played very, very well for them.
Yeah, and maybe that's what he wanted. I mean, maybe he wanted. He didn't want to sign a two-year deal. He wanted to sign a one-year contract, and he got 1 year. He got $8 million, and I think he's going to be able to parlay that. Only $6 million of that was guaranteed. It reunited him with Matt Rhule. That was his college coach in Temple. He had that breakout season with the Cardinals. They didn't want to pay him. They ended up going J.J. Watt, and then they re-signed Marcus Golden. But you're right. I mean, they've got to you know, if they can't keep him, then the Cardinals are in play. But if I'm Carolina, I'm doing everything I can to keep a guy that's giving me double digit sacks, and he's still very, very young.
What an interesting suggestion from our buddy over at CardsWire.com, Jess Root.
It is interesting.
It's a very interesting idea. One free agent each team should want to sign in 2022, and they kind of went round robin to each of their NFL writers. Jess covers the Cardinals for Touchdown Wire, and his suggestion of the free agent the Cardinals should want: Odell Beckham Jr. You think about that?
He's made the Rams better. I mean, he got out of Cleveland. It was a bad situation. Remember, he was such a dynamic player, you know, with the Giants, and he was great. Then he went to Cleveland, and he just didn't perform, and it needed a change of scenery, and he got a change of scenery, and he went to the Rams. And I'll tell you, you know, everybody talks about Cooper Kupp, but you know, Odell Beckham Jr. has really helped Matthew Stafford. I mean, he's been a great target for him. When they double Kupp or Kupp's not open, Odell Beckham Jr. has made a lot of plays. Now, he's the second guy there, and maybe that's what he's best suited for right now, which would be a perfect fit here, right? I mean, Hopkins comes back. He's your number one, and you're asking Odell Beckham Jr. to be your number two. He still makes spectacular catches, runs great routes, and, yeah, I mean, that would be a major upgrade over A.J. Green, I would think.
Yeah, and an expensive one at that, too. But I got to admit, there was a time 3-4 weeks ago I would have looked at this suggestion and just dismissed it out of hand. I'm not so quick to dismiss this one. I'm not saying I think it's going to happen or even that I think that it should happen. Just that this is one of those ones I would definitely think about if I were the Cardinals, because he, you know, they're always perpetually in search for that number two wide receiver. He could help. He has certainly helped the Rams. You're absolutely right about that. He is, at first, I didn't think he was going to make much of an impact. He has certainly made one. You can text us your thoughts on OBJ, Chandler Jones, and free agency with the Cardinals. The FanDuel text line is available to you right now at 620-620. When we come back, Super Bowl winning head coach heading to ASU, and we will have that coach on our airwaves. Brian Billick, the new offensive analyst to Herm Edwards, will join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Back here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station, live from the Auction Community Studios. Scheduled to join us here in a few minutes. Kind of a surprising announcement made by ASU yesterday. Yet another former NFL head coach joining the staff under Herm Edwards. Brian Billick, former Super Bowl winning coach with the Baltimore Ravens, joining Marvin Lewis, Herm Edwards, and now will be coaching as an offensive analyst for Herm Edwards at ASU. And joining us right now on the 72 Sold Sports Line is the new coach at ASU, one of the new coaches at ASU, Brian Billick, who joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Brian, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Glad to do it.
Well, Coach, happy to have you. I mean, your experience, your offensive mind, what you could do. Tell me about this opportunity to work at ASU and how it came about.
Well, I'm thrilled to death. Ray Anderson, who the AD, obviously. Ray and I go back, 20, 30 years. Ray was my agent and my lawyer for a long time before he went to the league office and then obviously on to ASU. Marvin Lewis, of course, was with me all those years in Baltimore. I've known Herb since 1980. So when they reached out to me and asked my interest, this was prior to, I was coaching the Hula Bowl, and really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being around the players. They called and started talking about some what they had in mind, what they were looking for, where they thought I could be of help. And it kind of got me excited to think about coming back into it and working particularly with individuals and people that I have such a relationship. And so it just seemed like a good idea.
Yeah, you can have a tremendous impact, I think, on these kids and this offense. And really with Zach Hill, the offensive coordinator, tell me just your thoughts on being able to help Zach Hill in his role as the OC.
Well, my role will be just that, to lend whatever experiences I have to give an overall perspective. And it's all about process. I mean, it's not like I'm going to come in and have new plays and protections. And I mean, quite frankly, particularly in college football, everybody's doing the same thing anyway. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. But it's about process. It's about formulating a game plan, how you're communicating it, how you're teaching it, how you're practicing it, and then how it shows up on game day. You know, since I left the NFL, obviously I've been did games for 6 years for Fox in the NFL, where every Friday I sat in a different facility watching practice, sometimes even sitting in meetings. In my work for the NFL Network, getting ready for the draft, obviously immersed in the college athletes for the last 12 years, getting ready for the draft and seeing what's going on in college football. And I've said many times, if I were ever to go back into coaching, that I would be a better coach for having had the experiences of what I've done the last 10 to 12 years, having that much broader view and not being tied to a team where you're so focused on your situation and your circumstance. So that's what I hope to bring into it, a broader view of basically highlighting and platforming the talents that ASU has and getting the most out of the players.
Was it the Hula Bowl that kind of made you realize that you still like scratching that itch a little bit as a coach, that maybe you missed it, or was there something else, Brian?
Well, yeah, I think Ray and Herm and Marvin were a little tactical in the way they approached it, because it was great. It was great getting back with the players. Really enjoyed it. I had a great staff. I mean, Wade Phillips was my defensive coordinator. Mike Tice was my line coach. Carnell Lake was my DB coach. Kevin Sumlin, former head coach at A&M and Arizona, was my receiver coach. So it was a heck of a staff, and had a great time and enjoyed the kids. And kind of got the juices flowing a little bit. So I think, I think with Ray and Marvin and Herm, they were probably a little strategic in their reapproaching me about it, thinking, kind of laying out what they had in mind right in the middle of my experience down there.
And Brian Billick, ASU offensive analyst, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. For you personally, knowing the relationships that you have with those guys, what does it mean for you to be reunited with Herm and to be together again with Marvin Lewis? The two of you won a Super Bowl together when he was your defensive coordinator. What is it going to mean for you to have the three of you guys in a room together, you know, breaking down plays and talking shop again?
It's going to be great, because you miss that. You know, even though I was around it still via my work for the networks and doing what I was doing, to be immersed in it, to be a part of that team, guys that you admire, you trust, you like, just talking ball, and that's the best part of it. That I'm going to be able to have those kind of interactions, and then whatever we can lend from me to the offensive side, like Marvin has done to the defensive side, and he's done a great job in terms of what he's done there to kind of integrate. And again, because Marvin and I work so closely, Marvin and I have a shared perspective on that process that I was talking about. And that's where hopefully I can be the most help.
Yeah, you'll be able to help with game planning, watching film of high school kids, evaluating the talent and scouting opponents, and so many different things you'll be able to. But this is going on in, like, the SEC. This is pretty prominent, right? Like Alabama and a lot of the other schools in the SEC, they have analysts. So do you think this could be the way of college football, the way it's going?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, staffs continue to grow. It's amazing how big staffs have gotten now, even in the NFL and then certainly in college football, and the way it's segmented out. But obviously a good another set of eyes, something that can lend itself to the evaluation and the process itself is always a good thing. It's got to be the right people, because it can also be a little cumbersome. Like, you know, if it's not done in the right way and the right people in the right vein, all of a sudden it just becomes a melange of voices, you know, and you don't want that to be for the players. It's all of a sudden their head's on a swivel and it's, well, who am I listening to here? So you have to do it in just the right way. And that's the key, because of the people that I'm working with and have worked with before and admire, I know we'll be able to structure this in a way that I think will be very productive for the kids.
Yeah, Brian, I know you're going to try to get ASU to that next level on offense and help out as much as you can with Zach and just everybody. But I do want to ask you about Jaden Daniels. He really didn't take that step next year. He's an elite runner, but there's a lot of work to do on the mechanics and him throwing the football. Is that something that you're looking forward to, getting in the film room with him, breaking down film and seeing how you could help him develop as a quarterback?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen, I'm just now getting into and start immersing myself in the film, and clearly there's a talent there. But you're right, it does have to mature. It does, you know, helping a quarterback recognize and seeing, you always hear a quarterback, particularly as they come into the NFL, at some point that you hear the ones that have success saying, well, the game slowed down for me. Well, the game never slows down. You know, that's physically impossible. What it means is he's seeing things more clearly. So it obviously appears that it's slowing down. He's able to process things more readily. And that's the next step for Jalen, is to get him to the point where he can process things more readily, because he's certainly shown the physical abilities to execute what he needs to do to be successful. The key now is to get him to see more clearly what it is that's going on and how he needs to react.
I remember the 49ers teams real well from the 80s and how dominant they were with Rice and Taylor and Montana. You're a disciple of Bill Walsh. How much does the offenses that Bill Walsh put into play back, you know, in the 70s and 80s, how much is that still a part of the NFL today?
Huge, huge. And not just the offenses, but just the process, the way Bill practiced back then. I was with Bill for 2 years. In his first 2 years with the 49ers, I was on his administrative staff, and to watch him piece this together and what he was doing and how he was doing it is basically the template of what everybody in the NFL is doing right now. So there again, it's about the teaching sequence. It's what can be, you know, obviously implemented, communicated, and then executed. And that's what that's all about. And that goes back to Bill Walsh and that original structure that he put in. And obviously I grew up with it, so to speak. Denny Green and I worked it on together in Minnesota in those years we were together. It's very much got Bill Walsh's hands written all over it.
Brian, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for carving out a couple of minutes for us. We look forward to maybe meeting you face to face, getting a chance to talk to you then, but congrats on the gig and thanks for your time.
Sure thing.
Brian Billick joining
us. Thank you, Coach.
72 Sold Sportsline. Get your price at 72sold.com. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, we've talked about all the free agent players who may or may not be here in a Cardinals uniform next year. Could the biggest loss be on the sideline? Could the biggest loss be their defensive coordinator, who may or may not be about to take the job with the Miami Dolphins? We'll talk a little Vance Joseph and what's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.